feeding yourself enough food throughout the day. That is nutrition.
Welcome to Shoulders Down, a podcast about intuitive eating and living. I'm your host, Leah Kern, and I'm an anti-diet dietitian and certified intuitive eating counselor. In this podcast, you will learn to harness your body's innate wisdom to govern not just how you eat, but also how you live. It is my mission to help you heal your relationship with food and body so you can live your most aligned and fulfilling life. Welcome, and I'm so glad that you're here. Hello, and welcome back to Shoulders Down. I hope you are doing well. It has been, what's going on right now? Like what I was going to say, it's been a busy week, but honestly, it hasn't really been such a busy week. I think I was just in the habit of saying that because for the past several weeks, I had been getting the final pieces together for my new course. So as of right now, the doors are only open to the waitlist, but in a few days, the doors are going to open to the public for my new course, The Return, which is all about returning to your body's innate power and wisdom so you can experience peace with food. So look out for that. So excited to be able to offer this. If you're new here and you're just hearing about this for the first time, it has been my dream for so long to be able to take my proven process, the process I use with one-to-one clients, and put it into a self-paced course format so more people can access the tools and support. And that dream finally has come to life. So I cannot wait to be able to reach more people and for you to get your hands on this if you have been thinking about reaching out for support, but one-to-one hasn't felt right for you. This is a beautiful option because I give all the lessons. There's over 80 video module lessons. There's complimentary worksheets that supplement various of the lessons. There's 12 videos from our body image guest coach and expert. There's an entire wisdom library of podcasts, books, research, videos, documentaries, all my recommended resources to support your intuitive eating journey. It is freaking loaded. I can't even believe the value that is within this course, and I'm so excited to share it with you. So right now the doors are not open to the public, but in a few days it will be. So keep an eye. If you follow along on social media, you'll see that announcement soon. And probably soon on the podcast, I'll be talking about it. So I'm so excited about today's episode. Today we have Rachel Hartley on the podcast. She is a fellow anti-diet intuitive eating dietitian. And I learned about her through one of her books, or her, I think it might be her only book, but her book called Gentle Nutrition. So pretty much gentle nutrition is the 10th principle of intuitive eating. And Rachel took the 10th principle and felt that there was a need, a gap in with this principle. So she expanded on it and created an entire book that really focuses on this principle. And so she's totally the expert in the field of gentle nutrition. And I wanted to have her on the podcast to really do a deep dive on gentle nutrition. And I think so many people are scared of the nutrition aspect of intuitive eating because if you've been burned by diet culture before, it can feel like, oh no, like, is there going to be more rules or what's this going to be like? And we talk about this in the episode, but I just want to say up front, gentle nutrition is all about nutrition from this place of self-care, not self-control. It's all about nutrition from a place of how do I want to feel versus how do I believe eating these certain foods will manipulate the way I look. So rest assured, this isn't a diet. There aren't rules. This is just a completely new way of approaching nutrition. And I'm excited for you to really hear from Rachel about how she decided to write this book on gentle nutrition and some of her tools that she uses on gentle nutrition. I also just want to say up front, thank you to Rachel. I say this in the episode, but one of the tools that we talk about, the hierarchy of nutrition needs, is such a valuable tool that I use with my clients, and I know it really resonates for them. So I'm just so grateful for her for sharing this tool, because I know that it's been super transformative for my clients to think about nutrition in this way that she offers it. So we're not going to do a listener question this week. Honestly, it's been a little cumbersome for me to manage listener questions. Still submit one if you have one via the link in the show notes. And I think the way it's going to work more so from now on is like doing entire episodes dedicated to listener questions, just because sometimes diving into the answer to the listener question before the episode, I think makes the episode a little cumbersome sometimes. So let's introduce Rachel and then dive into the episode. Rachel Hartley is a Boston, Massachusetts-based nutrition therapist, certified intuitive eating counselor, and nationally recognized food and nutrition expert. She holds a BS in human nutrition and a BA in psychology from Clemson University. After completing her dietetics internship at Emory University, she worked as a clinical dietitian and later as the outpatient dietitian for a large medical center where she provided individual nutrition counseling and led multidisciplinary disease management programs. In 2014, Rachel opened her private practice where she specializes in intuitive eating, eating disorders, women's health, and digestive disorders. She also runs the popular food and wellness blog, The Joy of Eating, and is the author of Gentle Nutrition, A Non-Diet Approach to Healthy Eating. Outside of her professional life, Rachel loves to travel with her husband, Scott, whose dance moves make a frequent appearance on her Instagram, and explore Boston with her rescue Bernese Mountain dog, Rose Byrne. Welcome to the podcast, Rachel. I'm so excited to chat, and like we don't really know each other, so it's nice to like get to know each other live on mic.
I know. It's so nice to like be able to meet people from Instagram. I was about to say in real life, but like, you know, Zoom life feels like real life these days. So yeah. We'll go with it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I would love to just dive right in and start with the question, what is your story with your relationship with food and body in as much detail as you're comfortable sharing?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think, you know, when I reflect back on my relationship with food and my body, you know, I'm absolutely like able to identify so many just lovely things I was able to experience as a child and really just many sort of privileges. I know we were just kind of sharing a little bit before recording that, you know, I grew up a little bit nearby you in Brooklyn, and I sort of think back to like what I was exposed to food-wise growing up in a city, and I'm like, oh yeah, I got to like, you know, try all different sorts of cuisines. You know, my parents were very, you know, into traveling. You know, they kind of grew up with like both of them not a lot of money, and so like traveling for them was something that was just this really they wanted to kind of immerse themselves, something that they really invested in for both me and my brother. And I think I'm able to sort of identify a lot of just kind of lovely, just a really lovely relationship with food when I was younger, and just, yeah, food kind of being this cultural connection, this family connection, this social connection, this pleasurable thing. And really at that point, there wasn't a lot of kind of diet talk in my family. So I think early life, definitely see, just lovely, lovely things with food.
That's awesome. And yeah. So first of all, I think a lot of people can't share that experience. So it's really beautiful to hear that that was your experience. And like, I'm sure so many of your clients, so many of my clients are like, yeah, I was 5 years old and I remember hearing my mom talk about calories or mm-hmm. points or whatever. So it's so beautiful to hear that it was so positive. I'm curious to hear kind of like the next chapter of like, okay, that was how you grew up. And at that point, there was no diet talk. What happens between like that point and like present day?
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I really think, you know, it would be, you know, we have to also note that a big reason that I didn't have diet talk in my family was because I was in a thin body as a child. And, you know, so were my, at the time, both of my parents were, my brother was, so there really wasn't, you know, a lot of, you know, pressure. We really had a lot of protection and kind of privilege in that sense. I think actually, you know, when I think about that changing, really, where it started to change for me personally was kind of going into probably, you know, and it all kind of runs together, but probably middle school, high school age. And, You know, I started to, you know, I, looking back, I had undiagnosed ADHD and anxiety, but didn't really have the language for it at the time. And so I had sort of gone from being like, the special thing about me as a kid was like, I was just really, really smart. Like I look back on videos and like home videos, I'm like, oh my God, I like knew more about dinosaurs then than I do now. Like I know all this information. So I sort of went from being this kid who just like was constantly getting a lot of praise for how smart I was. And then, you know, I wasn't like, you know, failing out of school, but like there was definitely, you know, as many kids with undiagnosed mental illnesses experience, a drop in my grades. So I kind of lost this special thing about me. But one thing that I did continue to get feedback on was the size of my body. And so, you know, me being a very like thin child, that was something I was getting a lot of positive feedback on, which, you know, in hindsight, it just feels so objectifying and really heartbreaking that, you know, that was something that I felt was special about myself when in reality it was just, I don't know, like, I don't think it's special that I have brown hair. I don't think it's
genetics.
Exactly. It was nothing I was doing. I was just a thin kid. And so, you know, I think it's really important to note that that's obviously nowhere the same as the sort of systemic, fat phobia and stigma that kids who are in bigger bodies face. And yet, you know, it is this sort of, a kind of symptom of our anti-fat culture and just how it affects people of every, you know, across the size spectrum. Like it's really something that harms everybody, you know, even if kids who are in bigger bodies and people who are in fat bodies really get the bulk of the stigma and oppression, it harms everyone. So yeah,
totally. And I think this theme of like the praise makes it seem like it's some kind of like moral, like good doing on your part. That's not like correct English, but that's what comes to mind. And I love that you're bringing up like the flip side too, which is that like for the child in a larger body, the stigmatizing comments and stuff is the opposite. Like it's some kind of moral failing when in reality, like there's genetic diversity and like these aren't things that are a matter of like how good you are, how hard you're trying. It's just like having brown hair or being tall. Like there's certain things that we just can't really affect as much as we've been led to believe that we can.
Right. Absolutely. And definitely it's really heartbreaking when I look back, because it was something that kind of stuck with me for quite some time. Like I remember in high school and, oh my goodness, all of us weren't we all just like obsessed with, you know, popularity and fitting in. And, I always remember one of the popular girls, we were doing, and this makes me want to vomit, but, in health class, you know, the body measurements, doing the, was it the caliper testing and BMI testing and, you know, all that stuff. And I remember I was going over to do one of those things. And this girl says, "Oh, Rachel, you're just going to get like 0% body fat," which is like, obviously not. But it's just, I remember thinking like, wow, like she's jealous of something about me.
Yes.
So it was really just so reinforced throughout, throughout my middle school and my high school years. And just, yeah, it just really breaks my heart to like look back and see that like, man, that was one of the very few things that I had any degree of kind of confidence in with myself. Yeah. That really isn't like, that shouldn't be someone like our body is something that changes throughout life. And when, you know, part of when our self-identity is wrapped up in something that's sure to change, like, gosh, I'm just makes me very grateful that I discovered intuitive eating and health at every size, before experiencing body changes.
Totally. Yeah. Your confidence is super fragile when it's hinging on something that's for sure going to change, like the way you look. So I'm curious to hear then this next piece. So I'm hearing that like you started to get comments about your body size, and that was a thing that you derived confidence from. what happens from there until like you become a dietitian and then eventually discover intuitive eating? I'm like, when I say I want to hear the story, I'm like, I want to hear the story.
Oh, no, totally. Yeah. So yeah, I think a little bit more kind of complexity came in when, oh my goodness, for all of us, when we went to school to become dietitians and, when I went to school, when I was training to become a dietitian, it was around the time that like, we had sort of two big cultural, like, I'm not sure how old you are, but I'm 38. And so we were having these two big kind of cultural shifts. One was like Food Network and all of this, that was becoming really popular. And I actually remember one of our professors saying that there was a huge increase in dietetic students because like the popularity of Food Network, which was really interesting. At the same time, it was when the clean eating movement was starting as well. And so, I think that learning, it was interesting. Looking back on it, I think there were always a lot of things in dietetics that just didn't really sit with me, especially about, weight and dieting. And that's not to say that I like went through school and I was like, health at every size, like pro-fat liberation, like that is absolutely not the case. But there were just some of these old school dietetics things. I double majored with nutrition and psychology. And so there were just certain things about just like, telling people just like, eat this, don't eat that. That just, I don't know, it always, things never quite felt right. And so I really latched on, that sort of clean eating culture that was coming up, that was something that just kind of connected with me a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was probably, the other big thing that had an impact on my relationship with food was trying to square like these feelings about food and bodies that I hadn't quite, worked through and processed, and then having these kind of emerging trends that were influencing, my way of thinking. And I just remember feeling like very confused about food, where, I felt like I had to like eat in this very certain rigid way to be a, a good dietitian, but also like, I love to go out to eat and try new foods. And like, when I looked around the world and all the travels that we had done, I'm like, wow, there's a lot of diversity in human cuisine. And like, how can like, I don't know, refined grains be so bad for you when like, I've been to countries where like that is like the, it was just all really, I think what I'm communicating is it was just really a big old confusing mess. And it really wasn't until sort of starting to learn more about intuitive eating and health at every size that I felt like the soup of thoughts that were in my brain about food just started to like settle down and clear away.
Yeah. Yes. So what is this moment for you? I know it comes at a different time for everyone in their dietetic journey. Like some people get glimpses of it in undergrad. Other people are like, I didn't know shit about intuitive eating or health at every size until I was like deep into my career. When does that moment come for you? And I'm so curious. I love hearing like people's first reactions to it because it's so counterculture to like the weight normative shit that we hear.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So this is kind of embarrassing, but I learned about intuitive eating. There was a website, I actually don't even know if it's still around, but I think it was like I don't remember what it was, but it was a website that had a bunch of dietitian handouts on it. And there was a handout that was on intuitive eating and just like the 10 principles of intuitive eating. And so I remember reading that handout and I was like, yeah, this is a great handout. I agree with all of this. And so this is when I was working a clinical job. It was like my first job out of my internship. And so I would, I would see clients and see patients, do this very like standard dietetics education on, a heart healthy diet or like, carb counting for diabetes management, And then I would like hand them this like 10 principles of intuitive eating.
Slipping them the secret sauce.
I really in my brain thought these two things could be conducive. I'm like, yeah, we can like, do intuitive eating and then also follow this very rigid diet plan that I'm like, prescribing you. So So if that kind of goes to show some of the offense straddling that I was
doing. Yeah, there's so much fence straddling. I think we all do that at some point in the beginning because it's just the cognitive dissonance is off the charts where you're like, well, like it's like that bargaining phase of like, can intuitive eating happen while I also prescribe this hearty, healthy diet? And for the folks listening or who are like, wait, I don't get it. Like, why can't you have the could be handing out the doing education on the heart healthy diet while also handing out the intuitive eating guidelines? Like, why isn't it compatible? Can we just like speak on that for a second?
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing that comes to mind is like, oh my goodness, like what good has a handout done?
Totally. Well, that's the first thing. It's just like lazy, like here, and I got to check this off. And yeah, I mean, that's like clinical though, where like they give you way too many patients in a day and you're like just handing out handouts because it's all you can do.
Yeah. So I think, I think it's really important, and we'll definitely dive more into this, I'm sure, as we talk about gentle nutrition and that aspect of intuitive eating. But, I think really that the issue is that, I was not teaching like, hey, learning about the patients I was working with and supporting them and making, changes to their eating patterns, to their lifestyle that supported heart health or, helped to manage their diabetes. I was teaching them, hey, here is a diabetes, like a way of eating to manage your diabetes. Here's like the rules, the guidelines, here's what you need to do. I was teaching them these things in a very one size fits all kind of way with like very little adaption to the human being who was in front of me. Where that's really counterintuitive intuitive eating. And this idea of like understanding a human being and their relationship with food and, autonomy and helping them figure out what's a way of eating that feels good to me. So, So I think that's really the sort of distinction I would say.
Yeah, I totally. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a rigid set of rules, and intuitive eating is about, there are no rules. It's about like making decisions that come from a place of like what feels good for you. So I think it can be sneaky though, because it's like, these aren't rules. This is just a heart healthy diet. But then of course it's like, don't have this, have this, don't have this. Yeah. So it sounds like when you found that sheet with the 10 principles on that dietitian website, there was like immediate like buy-in from you of like, yes. Did you ever have a period of time of like, or I guess that this question is more directed at learning about health at every size of like, wait a second, how could this be true? Or was it like you said in earlier, it like made some sense out of the soup of thoughts in your head? Was it like an immediate like, oh yes?
Yeah. So yes, I mean, to a certain degree, it was something that clicked with me, but I also, my understanding at the time was just one handout. Like that's not understanding intuitive eating and all of its not that anyone understands, these are really complex kind of things, but yeah. So it was something that I would say it really piqued my interest. It was something that connected with me. I think it was probably a few years after that I read intuitive eating for the first time. I read one of those kind of older editions that's a little bit more weight centric. It sort of like connected with me, but it didn't, completely 100% change my practice. Certainly had like an influence on it. After I'd worked in clinical, I worked as a dietitian at the VA, running a bunch of their outpatient programs. So I was doing like lots of outpatient counseling. And again, I was still just really kind of weeding through the brain soup of thoughts about food and feeling like, I think that's really a place where working in that outpatient role, that was a place where I grew a lot as a dietitian and, maybe didn't necessarily find answers, but started to ask like the right questions, mm-hmm. and started to better understand what is the problem with this weight centric, diet centric approach to food and eating. So I would see, the veterans I worked with, like as a dietitian, they would do this like, was it like customer experience survey or something?
Yeah,
like
that? Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, oh yeah. and I would notice, it was like, man, I'm always rated as like excellent in my services. And yet like people are not having the, quote unquote results that they want. Yep. Like, I feel really good in my interactions with people, but yet, people are like, you know, losing a bunch of weight and then gaining it back really quickly, or they're making these like lovely health promoting changes and their body size, like, you know, and they're not losing weight. Like I can see where they're, you know, feeding themselves in with like more nutritious foods and have an overall kind of quote unquote healthier eating pattern, right. But they're not seeing the results, you know, air quote in the scale. You know, I would also see people getting really, you know, kind of rigid and stressed about food, and where it felt like food just was being this thing that was stressful. So I think that's where I really started to be like, okay, what we're doing here is not working. And it really, honestly, it wasn't until, yeah, 8 years ago when I left that job to start my private practice, which whole other story, but did on a total whim, like, you know, just was like, I cannot go into my 30s working here. I'm giving my 2-week notice.
Hell yeah. I love that for you. I love that for you. Amazing. Yeah, I would love to hear that story one day. But so was that when the transition like fully happened, when you went into to practice by yourself?
Yeah, that's when I was really starting to dive in. And that was, you know, a lot of fence straddling. And I think a lot of that fence straddling is just learning the language, trying to better understand, yeah, like, how do we communicate these, you know, the sort of communicate this knowledge we have about intuitive eating and non-diet approaches in, you know, in a way that connects with individual humans. So it was really that it was fence straddling. It was also the just understanding counseling, you know, skills. So yeah.
It sounds like the combination of having like read the books and like having like the knowledge, like in theory from the books, and then also like your own experience, like watching like the veterans at the clinic, and those two things together, like really help confirm of like, yeah, like this is true. Like, you know, restriction doesn't lead to weight loss, or sustainable, people gain it back, all the pieces. Yeah. And it really resonates with my experience too. I also like started in clinical and all the things, and, you know, eventually the dissonance gets like loud enough and you're like, I can't do this. It's just like not right. That's awesome. I would love to hear the story of how you left. I'm like so interested in that part, but for another time.
Yep.
So to shift into a little bit of your world within the world of intuitive eating. So for folks listening, gentle nutrition is the 10th principle of intuitive eating. And Rachel wrote a book on gentle nutrition. And I'm so curious to hear about like what inspired you to take the 10th principle and do a deep dive on it, write a whole book on it.
Yeah. Yep. So it was actually, I think, sort of that same, just like I was working things out with what I had learned in traditional dietetics and, you know, what I was learning about intuitive eating and health at every size. I think for me, I was seeing, you know, some of the discourse around nutrition in the non-diet spaces and feeling like it's like, ooh, I have feelings about this and I haven't quite like worked it all out. I don't quite like, things just aren't connecting and I don't quite know why it is. And it was actually it was a podcast interview with a dietitian, Paige Smathers, if you're familiar with her, mm-hmm, years and years ago, that started to help me put things into place. But one of the things we talked about was how, you know, saving nutrition as this, like, you know, putting it as the last principle, or sort of approaching it as like, you know, there was a common mantra of, you know, gentle nutrition is off limits until you've like healed your relationship with food. And I was like, I think that sort of puts nutrition on a pedestal. Like, mm-hmm, that really
gives power. Yeah.
Yeah. It gives it so much more power and it turns it into something where it's almost like this, like, hey, heal your relationship with food and here's the prize at the end of the tunnel. When for so many people, healing their relationship, I would say most people, healing your relationship with food is really a lifelong journey. Yeah. So it was really that got me kind of thinking more about like, I want to talk more about nutrition, but like maybe evaluate, redefine, explore its role in non-diet approaches. And yeah, hopefully shift some of that discourse around it.
Yeah. It's so interesting to hear that. It's so true. I so like full transparency in my work for a while, I followed that, you know, I'm a certified intuitive eating counselor. I'm an anti-diet dietitian. And I followed that, like, well, we have to like keep nutrition for the end once I'm seeing certain aspects of, you know, you rejecting the diet mentality and all that. And only really recently have I shifted into from noticing, just like what you're saying, just from working with clients and noticing that like it's gaining this power. They're like getting fearful of like, what's going to happen when we talk about nutrition at the end? Is the party going to be over? And I've only recently started to realize, oh, that actually might not be serving them so much as compared to like integrating it throughout. One thing I like about introducing it later on is that I find that the client is like often already doing it. Like they're already using gentle nutrition. They're already like naturally craving more nutrient dense foods. They're already like having that like food body choice congruence where they're craving the things that are supportive to them. And at the end, all we're really doing is like giving them language to like capture what's going on. So I do really like that part. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I really see nutrition as something that, you know, kind of gets integrated throughout this intuitive eating process. And you're so right that people just naturally will have these experiences where maybe they're more intentionally considering nutrition, without it being this kind of diet mentality kind of thing. You know, it just kind of naturally happens throughout that intuitive eating process. So it is really cool to be able to see like, yeah, these are things that you just start to do as you build a greater awareness of your body and your body's cues. And as you're making peace with food and some of those quote unquote bad foods, you know, are taken off the pedestal, it creates more space to engage with nutrition in a non-diet kind of way. So I think and really where I try to reframe gentle nutrition is like, you know, you think about the second principle of intuitive eating, of honoring your hunger. And, you know, that can look a lot of different ways for different clients and how we're working with them. You know, sometimes that means in eating disorder work, providing a more structured meal plan. Sometimes it's a more kind of flexible meal plan to help, you know, help people establish a more consistent pattern of feeding their body throughout the day. Other times it's just, you know, teaching people about their hunger and fullness cues and how we can connect with that. But one thing I try to reframe about gentle nutrition is like feeding yourself adequately, feeding yourself enough food throughout the day. That is nutrition.
Yes.
Like it's like, mm-hmm. It is that second principle there of intuitive eating. And so when we sort of save gentle nutrition for the last principle, you know, I think it turns gentle nutrition into just being about fruits and vegetables and whole grains and nutrient density, which, you know, is part of nutrition, but we're really forgetting that most important aspect, which is, are you eating enough like calories and carbohydrates and fats and proteins? So that's where I sort of say like, it's something that we're introducing from the beginning, actually.
I love that reframe. And it makes me think of that pyramid that you created that I love so much, with the bottom being adequacy. So to just like dive right into that, how was the idea for this pyramid born? Because it's so like, it's so opposite the pyramid we see in like, for me, I remember them showing it to us in like freaking like probably like first grade or something. They like sat us down and we're like, here's the food pyramid. And it's just low key, so shaming because it's like the tiniest little square at the top is sweets. And you're like 6 years old and you're like, well, that's sad. Cause I love sweets, you know? And like the later version of it, I remember when I was a little older was like, this image of like a person walking up, like you like to show movement. And it was like, yeah, you have to walk to the top to earn those sweets. So like just these like low key shaming messages versus the pyramid that you've created. And this is a podcast. So obviously like people can't like see it and we'll talk through it. Totally like is like so like revolutionary in terms of like how you think of nutrition and like this bird's eye view perspective. How did this idea come about for you?
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. Cause I will say that was one of those, when I started to come up with it, I was like, I give you're like,
this is genius. It is. Like, you deserve that pat. Yeah.
I was like, yes, like this makes sense. So a little bit of the background on it. My hierarchy of nutrition needs, it was inspired by, obviously, there's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs that we all know, like, the basic needs, like food and clothing, or like food, shelter, whatever at the bottom, right, and like self-actualization at the top. There's also another dietitian, Ellen Satter, who does work with childhood feeding, who has a really lovely, kind of food. And I forget exactly what hers is called, but it's like hierarchy of food needs or something. Yeah. And it's a really lovely, sort of tool as well. And so it was one that I was starting to kind of use in my practice. And it was just an image that I would pull out with clients from time to time. And there was just something about it that wasn't quite kind of like clicking for them. I think there's maybe a little bit more of that sort of community focus versus like when you're mm-hmm. sitting one with a human being trying to figure out how to feed themselves. And so what I sort of came up with was this nutrition hierarchy of needs. And, the base of that pyramid, and it looks sort of like the old school food guide pyramid. But the base of that is adequacy. So are you eating enough? Are you eating enough throughout the day? I really see that as the tenet. And I think research really shows the base of nutrition. Are you eating enough food? So adequacy is that base. Next comes balance. And I don't mean that like sometimes people hear balance and they think I'll have an apple with my pizza or something, like kind totally. Of like quote unquote good foods and quote unquote bad foods. But I really see balance as like, are we getting at most of our meals all those macronutrients? So fat and protein and carbohydrate, like, are we getting a sort of balance of different foods on our plate? From there, I go to variety, which is like, are you getting a wide variety of different foods? Different foods have different nutrients. And so when we're eating a wide range of foods, it's a lovely little kind of, nutrition insurance policy. It helps.
I love that you say that, by the way. That nutrition insurance policy, I'm always like, captures it so perfectly to me when I've read that in your work. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's like, there's so much, emphasis on individual micronutrients. And yet, for the most part, like obviously we're dietitians, like there are a lot of people who have deficiencies, but when we're focusing in on just like getting a variety, for the most part, we're going to get a lot of the most of the nutrients that we need.
Yeah. Something I love to bring up with the variety piece too is how opposite that is from diet culture's messaging, which is like meal prep, the same chicken, broccoli, rice every day, or like, here's a few safe meals on the meal plan. And then you totally miss out on variety because you're scared to stray from like your few safe meals. And totally, like, there could be really real instances where you're missing out on like various nutrients because you're only sticking to certain foods.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it really does like it. Yes. You end up really getting some gaps in your nutrition and when we're eating a lot of the same foods. So that variety is just really a really important aspect of totally. Nutrition, and I would say like then the top of the pyramid, that's individual foods. And that's really where like kind of individual medical nutrition therapy kind of stuff can come in. So perhaps like individual foods that might have some sort of nutritional benefit that's specific to a person. So, maybe someone who has a history of heart disease where we're increasing intake of soluble fibers and working with foods in that way. Perhaps someone who, we're trying to work on increasing antioxidant intake in their eating pattern. It may be things that are just more like unique individual needs. Like I'm thinking of you know, that sort of individual foods might encompass someone who actually needs to reduce their fiber intake and get more refined grains in for gut issues, because sometimes that's a thing that can be helpful for them. That's where a lot of media tends to focus.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the eat this, don't eat this. This is a superfood, but it's really the least important part. It doesn't mean it can't be part of nutrition, but it's not that, like, if we're not eating enough food, if we're not getting all those macronutrients, if we're not getting a variety, like, it doesn't really matter how many blueberries you're eating.
Exactly. I love that so much, because it is the thing we hear most about, like, in these BuzzFeed articles and all this social media stuff, and they make it seem so life or death. Like, these five foods are giving you acne, or, like, you know, don't eat these things to beat the bloat. And it's just like reducing nutrition down to this idea of like food, these foods have so much power. But I love the way that you put it in its place, because it's like, if you look at the pyramid, it's the smallest thing. Like, and like you're saying, it doesn't matter in the grand scheme, like, how much of this, like, quote unquote, good food you're having, if you don't have these other baseline needs met. It's just like, it's so useful. And I've used it with my clients. So thank you. It's such an incredible tool.
Absolutely. I'm glad it's been helpful for you.
Have you, this is like totally, it's not off topic, but have you seen that new documentary Stutz with like Phil Stutz, the therapist?
No. Oh, is that the Jonah Hill one?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I want to.
Yes. You have to see it, because he is really, like, he's a really unconventional therapist in that, like, he's big on physical tools, and he has this pyramid that's not like, it's not Maslow's hierarchy. And he talks about the, like, the first thing you need to work on if you're like dealing with mental health stuff is your life force. And it's a pyramid. And the bottom is your relationship with food and body, which I love that he has in there.
Oh.
The next one is your relationship with other people. Like, he says, like, other people, like, pull us back to ourselves. And when you're like feeling like alienated from like your true self when in a like depressive or anxious episode. And then the top is your relationship with yourself, like your thoughts and stuff. I mean, this is like a whole, that's like beyond our scope, but just like, I think there's something so helpful about like, what do I focus on first? Okay. Adequacy, or like, okay, my relationship with, you know, my body in his case. I think it would be a cool parallel for you.
That's cool. I'm definitely, that's been on my list, and I'd be so curious, just thinking about like how he has relationship with food in your body. I'm just thinking about like that experience of embodiment in our work. I don't know if that's how.
Oh, absolutely.
Approaches it, but yeah, like just like the work we do with clients, like in helping them regulate their nervous system and like tap into their cues.
Yes.
So that's cool.
So cool. It's like on my list to make content about, because I'm like, how cool. I know so many people are watching this that like one of his main tools prioritizes relationship with food and body. Like, I'm just like, thank you. I love that.
Yeah, that's pretty dope. I love it.
Yeah, I love it too. What we just went through, the hierarchy of nutrition needs, is just like one tool that you offer in the book, Gentle Nutrition. If you had to define gentle nutrition in like a kind of like succinct way, what is kind of like your elevator pitch for how you explain gentle nutrition to people?
Yeah. Yeah. I always laugh when I get this question, because the first manuscript I sent in with my book, like my editor got back to me, and, you know, with all the like bazillion and one different edits that they do. And she's like, so you kind of need to like define gentle nutrition in a succinct way. I was like, oh yeah, I guess that would be a smart way to open the book, huh? Because it's such a nuanced thing, and it's so hard to like squeeze it into this, like, you know, this sound bite, like, you know, it's
totally
like, yeah, when you understand something with a lot of nuance, it's just very hard to like narrow it down. But I think what I sort of came up with is like, you know, gentle nutrition is like the intentional integration of nutrition, with a focus on self-care, both, you know, physical and psychological, without the focus on manipulating our body size. So it's really like how we intentionally, use nutrition and food as a tool to support our physical and mental well-being, not to change our body size.
I love that so much. Yeah. A catchy little phrase I like to say that is like totally aligned with what you're sharing is like self-care, not self-control. Mm-hmm. So for someone who's like, okay, I mean, to me, it's obvious, and to you, it's obvious, and probably to most people listening, it's obvious just from like, if you're listening to this, you're probably in the intuitive eating world in some way. But just to like be crystal clear, how is gentle nutrition different from like diet culture's version of nutrition?
Right. So I think I would say in two sort of main ways. One is that, obviously diet culture's approach to nutrition is typically based on like thinking of nutrition as a tool for weight loss. It is teaching you like even things that are ostensibly about health really have this subtext of like, and it'll help you manage your weight. So there's, that would be one main thing. I would say the other is that there's not this kind of rigidity around it. So, a diet culture approach to nutrition would, oftentimes is much more rigid and inflexible. So more about like, these are bad foods, these are good foods. A gentle nutrition approach really looks at our eating pattern, not just like, it's not about like what you're having at a single snack or what you're having at a meal, but taking this kind of bird's eye view of what does your eating look like over time? And, what is the overall pattern of your eating? And that's what we're trying to influence, not just making the right choice for breakfast or the quote unquote right choice for your snacks.
Yeah, it's so interesting because a diet culture so often like put so much emphasis on like the 24-hour period. They're like, was it a good day? Was it a bad day? Or even like the calorie tracking apps that are like, here's your allotment for the day. And this is something that irks me so much because it's like, it's arbitrary, like the 24-hour window. Our bodies don't just like draw a line in the sand and they're like, well, clock strike midnight. Like it just like, it's just like not how it works.
Like resets overnight.
Yeah. And I always like think, just love to share with clients that like our bodies are so smart and they have the ability to like store and utilize nutrients over time. Like you're not going to suddenly develop a nutrient deficiency if you go a day or two or even more without like fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Absolutely. Like, I don't know, maybe you don't poop quite as well, but like, you'll also
be fine.
Fine.
Yeah. Totally. I do like long distance hiking, like backpacking trips, and we don't eat vegetables. Like you can't bring a vegetable into the wood or fruit. Maybe some dried fruit. And like, I always love to share that with clients. Like my longest hike I've gone out for is a month and it was a straight month, nothing fresh, nothing. Like, and like, I live to tell the tale. Here I am,
Yep. You're here today, living and breathing in front of me on Zoom. So you'll be okay.
We're going to go to our wrap-up questions. Something that I love to ask everyone who comes on the podcast is, what is your biggest diet culture pet peeve?
Oh, gosh. That's a really hard one. I have so many.
You can pick a few.
Okay. That's the most annoying thing to me. That's hard. I think it kind of like nails on a chalkboard when there's, just this sort of insidious version. It's a more broad kind of one, but this, kind of insidious diet culture thing that it does of like, it's about health, but it's really about your weight. Like when there's that sort of subtext there, I think that's one of those things that really just kind of drives me absolutely, absolutely bonkers. So that's the one that's coming to mind for me. Probably because we just talked about it a minute ago.
Well, it's also so prevalent right now because like the public is catching on of like diets are out and like wellness is in. And so wellness is all about like optimizing your well-being and like all these things, just feeling good. But like, you're absolutely right. And like the subtext is 100% and you'll lose weight, or like you should lose weight, because like, I just think of all these wellness ads, like for these like supplements and powders and like different, even like yoga pants and stuff. And like, of course the person who's advertising, it's always in this like thin body. And so it's like, it is just feeding you this like subliminal messaging that's like, and if you do all these wellness things, you'll be small.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And as we're talking about it, I realized the other biggie is like just how diet culture kind of treats cultural foods, how it's like either like exoticized, where it's like, ooh, like, you know, turmeric, or like, you know, ooh, this like fancy berry from, you know, superfood from like wherever, or it like demonizes it. And it's really interesting. It's like very tied into like, you know, just white supremacy in our culture, and how, you know, just how other foods are treated is very reflective of these kind of like bigger systemic, kind of forces. But that's definitely one that kind of irks, always nails on a chalkboard. Like, you know, when you see a food being demonized, that you're like, that's a staple food for like an entire,
yeah. Like white rice is the first one that comes to mind for me. And like how often we are told as dietitians to tell people like, just swap brown. And it's like, well, that's robbing someone of a culturally significant food for them that like, yeah. it's could literally like ruin like the taste and the appeal of that dish for them. Like, who are we to say just swap brown? Like it's, and then it makes me think about the value of like having culturally significant foods and being connected to your culture, and like the social determinants of health of like that kind of connection being good for your health. And we like another thing we just totally weren't taught, like in this tunnel vision for like nutrients. Like,
yes. Yes. Totally. Totally. And that you just got my ear going for like my third one, which is like total disregard for social determinants of health. Like, you know, we're dietitians, we know nutrition is important, but like, you know, let's stop putting nutrition up on a pedestal. Like having access to healthcare, like having a safe community, like having clean, like a clean environment. Like these are so much more important than
so much more important. Yeah. Totally. Totally. Yeah. I'm so glad we got there, because it's like, talk about putting like bird's eye view and putting things in perspective. It literally doesn't matter how much quote unquote healthy food or nutrient dense foods you have, if you're like baseline stress from like living in poverty and not having like your basic needs met, it's not going to move the needle on your health.
Totally. Yeah. So I revised my previous statement. That is definitely my most annoying nails on a chalkboard one. Mm-hmm. Because I know that it probably has the fact that we believe that health is entirely in our hands, that has the biggest negative impact on just like the world in general. So that I revised my statement.
Yeah. Every time I ask someone that question, they're like, oh God, I have to pick just one. And they're just so many. Yeah. Yeah. I echo all of those. I totally feel that. And then this next question is a little bit like heady meta, but I love to pose it. We're intuitive eating dietitians. We've talked a lot about intuitive eating. What does intuition mean to you? And part two is, how do you experience it?
Ooh, that's a good, that's a really good question. So to me, you know, intuition is kind of this, gut instinct that you get. I feel sort of silly even saying that, because it's such a sort of simple explanation. But, you know, I think, I guess what I'm thinking about a lot, and I don't know that I have like a concise kind of definition here, but just how like the difference between our nervous system, like fight or flight response, like how, like what that's kind of telling us versus like that sort of second, like, you know, second wave response. Like, how are we sort of distinguishing what our body is telling us? And that's not this sort of like necessarily like your reptile, like maybe like your reptile brain is kind of brought into it, but it's not like the thing that's like driving the, you know, driving the show. So what I was thinking about there is like, you know, how we can have this gut fear or anxiety or, you know, nervous system response to something, and being able to like recognize and observe that, but also kind of like integrate our like brain knowledge into that. Just babbling now.
No, I mean, I hear you. I think you're hitting on an important point, which is that intuition can be hard to act to distinguish from like anxiety. Like, is this my intuition or is this my anxious brain? And how some other people who have come on the show have like said something similar is almost that like you're saying, like the fight or flight response, like the initial nervous system response is like the initial storm. And then like the intuitive answer kind of like slides in more quietly, like after.
Yes. It's sort of, I'm thinking about it in terms of intuitive eating, how there's like brain knowledge and body knowledge is one way that I kind of teach my clients about it. Like, we have our body knowledge about our body's cues, you know, our cravings, our hunger fullness cues, how food makes us feel and all that. And then we have like our brain knowledge, which is maybe able to take in like not necessarily what's happening in our body, but just, you know, like just integrating those two together. And so that's maybe what I'm trying to communicate there.
Yeah. It's definitely a really hard question. I don't think we're asking it a lot, which is funny because like we're intuitive eating, but it's like the word is just like, what is intuition? And the second part being, how do you experience it? So like, I think it's almost easier to answer this question when you think of it like beyond food. Like if you're making a decision or you're just thinking about something, like, is it, should I do it? Should I not? Is it right? Is it wrong? Like, how does the answer like make itself known in your body?
So this is probably, I tend to be like, my decision making is like mulling over things for a while and then just being like, you know, like, screw it. I'm just like doing it. So I don't know, like, I'm not always the best with that. But, you know, I think that's such a hard question because I really I actually don't know the answer to that. And it's something I've thought about, like how my intuition kind of plays a role in my life. And, you know, there's part of me that wants to be like, it just like naturally integrated into how I live my life. And maybe it is, I don't know, but it's just not a thing that I really think about a lot. And so, it's a really good question and something I've thought about and something that I want to bring to therapy a little bit more, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I love the ability to say, I don't know when I don't know. It's so not tangible, like the concept of intuition. It's very interesting to me, to just hear people, like I ask it in part because it's like so fascinating to me to hear how different people experience it. Cause like no two people are really saying the same thing.
Right. Yeah. It's really cool. Cause like our just intuitive, our felt sense, like really is something that is so individual, to yeah. other people. And I think about it. It's funny. Cause I think about it a lot with like the work I do with other people and my clients and understanding what that's like for them. And yet, I recognize, I'm like, wow, it's something I really don't have a good sense of myself. And that's, so it's definitely an observation I've had in the past.
Yeah. Don't worry. There's so many moments of like I'll be posing a question to a client and I like, will be like, I want to make sure that I like pose this to myself every once in a while too, because like you're saying, like it's, I think it helps the coaching connection because you're like, oh, I know the experience of like sitting with this exact question.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I love the way you state that. Yeah.
So those are all my questions for you. I love to ask at the end, is there anything else on your heart that you're wanting to share with the people? Is there anything that we missed?
No, I feel like we covered, we did a really well-rounded conversation. I think we hit on a lot of important things. So no, nothing that comes to mind.
Awesome. Well, where can people find you to learn more about your work and stay connected?
Yeah. So people can check out my website, rachelhartleynutrition.com. I've got a blog there where, you know, blog about intuitive eating, health at every size, just, you know, gentle nutrition. So there's lots of like just years and years of resources on there that are hopefully helpful. You know, I've got my book, Gentle Nutrition, which if this conversation was interesting to you, feel free to grab a copy of. You can also find me on Instagram. That's where I'm most active, you know, sharing intuitive eating content, but also a lot of pictures of my dog. So if you like big fluffy dogs, you know, you found your gal. And we, you know, work with clients throughout the U.S. and out of my associate dietitian in Columbia. So in Columbia, South Carolina. But that's basically where you can find us.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Rachel. It was so wonderful chatting with you.
Yeah, it was lovely chatting with you as well.
If you enjoyed this episode, if it inspired you, if you learned something, it would mean so much to me if you rated it and reviewed it. And if you feel called to, share it with someone who it might resonate with. You can find me on Instagram at leahkern.rd. You can also join my weekly newsletter by visiting leahkernrd.com. And I'll see you next week.